Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, Celine Song joins us to discuss her triumphant film Past Lives, and we do the 2024 Fantasy Draft.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 294 of Real Blend, a podcast that has the same number of Emmy Awards as Better Call Saul.
Oh, well.
My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing director. What? Oh. Wait, I'm sorry. Let me amend that joke. A podcast that has more Emmy Awards. I meant real Emmy Awards, Jake, not the regional ones. Do the regional ones count? Are they real?
Hey, I'm a quarter of a way to an EGOT, baby.
They have chocolate inside of them. You break them in half.
You'll never know.
On this week's show, oh my gosh, we're so excited to be joined by Celine Song. Celine Song is going to be joining us to talk about her triumphant film, Past Lives. We are finally going to reveal the 2023 Fantasy Draft winner, and then we're going to head right into our picks for 2024. So we got a lot of show, a lot of stuff to get to, starting with the introductions, and I will go first with my man, Kev McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Kev, how are you, sir?
Sean, Jacob, Gabriel, actually, yeah. I mean, I'm very excited for people to hear the Celine Song interview because, like, I know Past Lives has been a big film we talked about a lot in our text thread. So if you're into camera work and lens choices and all that kind of stuff, she really dives deep into the filmmaking. It's amazing.
She's so good. Joining us, as always, in the third chair, Jake Hamilton. I'm sorry, Emmy Award winning. Two-time Emmy Award winning? Three-time? God
more,
damn it,
more, you're so more,
how many times were you nominated, Jake?
I was about to say nine-time loser.
I was going to say nine-time loser. That's
nine-time loser, shit. Three-time
12
winner.
12 nominations? Mm-hmm. You've had 12 nominations.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Why do you do this show?
You miss every shot you don't take, Sean.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
I guess that's
true. If there
you're
was
so
ever a pitch
Michael
to,
Scott said that, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then Wayne Gretzky, which is a great joke if you know The Office. Gabe, I was thinking about the other day. Remember when we just randomly ran into Wayne Gretzky at the trip, which is at the trip where Kevin got that sweatshirt? Ironic, because the three of us all just interviewed moments ago Austin Butler. Full circle, okay. Baby.
We're just repeating our year over and over again.
Wow, that is mind-blowing.
And I would like to say, as we pitch to watch us on YouTube, if you ever have wanted to see the personification of what it means to live a good life, I urge you to go on YouTube and look over my right shoulder, and you will see what it means to live a good life.
We'll leave it at that. That's nice.
Yeah, there's a little tease for you. A little tease for the kids, as they say.
Now that you're on the YouTube channel, thanks for joining us. Hit subscribe, turn on your notifications. Let some other people know to come follow us. Weigh in the comments. Let us know where you're watching us from. As you guys know, we interact with you guys when the show drops. So we're very happy to have you guys here. Thank you very much. Of course, if you want to listen to Real Blend, all the different places you get your audio needs met, we are there as well, too. Spotify, Apple Playlist, all those different cool places. I started to listen to the show on Spotify every once in a while now when I'm driving in the car. So that's been a little bit fun. And if you would like to sign up for Real Blend Premium, here's what you get with it. You get an ad-free version of the podcast. You get a newsletter from me every other Friday. So make sure that you check the description of wherever you are listening to Real Blend right now, and it'll tell you how to sign up for Real Blend Premium. In the meantime, as mentioned, we have a huge show to get to. 2024 is off and running. And in addition to the huge show that we have this week, you got a couple of things in the hopper, a couple of really cool things that are potentially lining up. We like to tease on this show, but we won't get into those. We'll leave it right here with the fact that we have an interview locked. Dan Levy was earlier this week.
Yes.
If you want to listen to a really great episode, Dan Levy came on the Real Blend podcast, talked about his new film, Good Grief, and specifically got into some really great conversations about being a first-time director and a lot of the obstacles that he encountered, and some really fascinating, I thought, introspective.
The Ferris wheel story is one of my favorite behind-the-scenes stories we've had. So funny.
Yeah, it is a really good one.
Yeah.
But talking about what I really loved hearing him get candid about was unlearning how to just be David from Schitt's Creek, and how his character in Good Grief needed to be more quiet and more subdued and not the center of attention, and him having to physically, as he says, deprogram himself from being David Rose after getting to play that character for a really long time. Anyway, fascinating interview, I thought, you know, and not intentional, but some of those themes pop up in past lives.
Yes.
How do you deprogram yourself, you know, when you've been with this person throughout your entire childhood?
Yeah.
And then suddenly one of them moves away. And so let's get right into our interview with Celine Song, where we talk about a lot of the things that motivated her through the process of past lives. I'm really glad we got her at this stage in the game. Yes. As well, too, because this movie has been around, obviously, for a really long time. So we talked to her about going through the film festival circuit, going through the awards circuit. Here's a reason to watch this on the YouTube channel. She holds up an incredible shot of her with all the directors from the Golden Globes, of which she was a nominee. So enough teasing. This is Celine Song talking about past lives and her career up to this point on the Real Blend podcast.
Hey, Celine, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm Celine. Good. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the film having its world premiere at Sundance. Mm-hmm. And I want you to just sort of, if you can, describe this past year, the rocket ship journey that you've been on. and if you could, is there an absolute highlight of the post-release process that you're going to remember forever?
Well, I don't know. I feel like it's like a, you know, what is like, isn't there like a thing for like a soccer players where it's like everything that every time they're on the field, it's a highlight reel after highlight reel. Like that's sort of the way it feels when it comes to the highlights, because it's all been so amazing starting from Sundance, because I feel like that really is the birthplace of this film. I still remember sitting in the green room of the Eccles and being really, really nervous and very scared about this movie being out in the world, because I have no idea. Because I knew what the movie was to me. I knew what the movie was to people who made it. So I loved the movie regardless. It's kind of like that part of it was unconditional. But sure. then, of course, as the movie was coming out, there is a hope. You're hoping that your audience is going to receive the movie the way that you imagine for it, you hope for it. And that exact thing happened at Sundance. So I think it started off with like such an amazing, totally spectacular way for a film to be birthed into the world. And then from there, of course, there's a process of just like a releasing the film, which is the, in June, it was released in June in the summer. And I think that part of it was like such a special thing, because it was now being seen, this thing that I wrote and directed with all these people. And that was very much a secret for us. We talked about it as like, we just have this little secret of this movie, you know, that we can't wait to share. Right.
Yeah.
And then when June came, it was playing in just movie theaters. You know, people could just buy a ticket and go in and watch it. And it's my first movie. So just the fact of that was so completely incredible, you know. I don't know. It was just so special and so cool. And And then, of course, now I feel like, yeah, all the nominations, like all this awards part of this is like,
yeah,
again, just like everything else is new to me. So I'm also
it's surreal.
Learning.
It could be a surreal process.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is completely it's completely strange. And like, you know, you always feel like an outsider, and then you meet directors who've done this for a million years and they also feel like an outsider. So I don't think this feeling goes away. You know?
Oh, they do. That's nice.
Yeah. No, it's not going. It doesn't go away. It's that feeling forever. So because they all share the feeling of like, yeah, I feel like an outsider here. I'm like, you've done this so many times and you still feel like an outsider. And cool. So this feeling that I have is going to be, it's going to be here forever. So this part of it is, I don't know. I don't feel, I'm sure so few filmmakers feel at home at this part of the process, but, I don't know, but it's been really fun and very, very cool. Yeah.
Kevin and I were just discussing, we were just talking about how when they announced the Golden Globes, to see your picture, you know, with the four other nominees was incredible. We were so excited for you.
Oh my God. Like there's this, like, it's just such a cool thing. I mean, like, did you guys see that amazing, the directors, I posted it on social media as well, but like, did you guys see this?
That's what we're talking about. That's the six nominations for the Golden Globes, right?
Oh, and, yeah. I was like, yeah. I'm like, hello.
Yeah, I mean, like Marty and Nolan.
No worries.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that I kind of want to go into that, because when you see yourself on that screen with the other filmmakers around you, and it's your first movie you've ever made as a feature film directorial person. The other filmmakers that are in that category, what have your conversations been like with them? Have they talked to you about your movie? Like, have you had any of these filmmakers that are in this category, have you had conversations about each other's films yet? Have you gotten to that point?
Well, I feel like, you know, usually the context at which I meet them is at a party or something, or like one of these. So it's always like stays in the thing of like, hey, hang in there, or like, hi, you know, love your film, can't wait. It's sort of like that. So I don't think that I've had a really in-depth thing. I feel like it's usually the smaller things, or the chance encounters, or like maybe the filmmakers who are not fully in this mode. I think sometimes it's like easier to connect with them, just because like they don't have a million things that they have to do the way that like I do, you know. So it's sometimes easier to have like one side of the equation be a little bit like more together at this time. And of course later when those filmmakers, they go on with this part, I'm sure, you know, I'm gonna be the person who is like, hi, I have a ton of time to talk to you.
Just a quick follow-up to Sean's question though, because you know, people change, but movies don't. So a movie comes out, right? And it's, the movie is what it is. It comes out 10, 15, 20 years prior, whatever. And then as people grow, like I had an experience where I watched No Country for Old Men when I was in my 20s. And it didn't hit me anywhere near as hard as it did until my late 30s. And I'm like, oh, now I understand that ending. So on a different scale, looking at your film, as Sean talks about a year prior, the film hitting Sundance, as you sit here right now, you are a different person. You've grown over this year. And I just wonder how your perspective on your own film has changed. The movie that you made and put out. And now as you sit here a year later with what is happening in the world or people that you've met and encountered, how has the film grown at all in your own mind?
Well, I think that the what you just said is so true, because the movies don't change. And I think that past lives doesn't change. And also my relationship to past life hasn't changed at all, is the truth of it. Because I feel like how I felt after I finished Director's Cut, and then maybe after my the sound edit was done and I was watching the whole thing down, I think that's the same feeling I have about that movie. You know, what I see are, you know, everything that were limits for me as a filmmaker. So as in like, I see flaws in it. I see things that I'm like, yo, that was cool. Like, you know, like I think everything that I felt in the sort of finishing part of the film, I think I still hold on to. And even sitting in the Eccles, I think that my feeling wasn't different. I think what does change is the knowledge that this movie doesn't just connect with people who made the movie, but it also is connected with total strangers and people globally, people around the world. So I feel like my relationship to that changed, as in like now they I feel like now I have a relationship with the audience, right? But I think that my relationship to the movie really doesn't, because I see it and I see the same movie to me, but the one that I made with the passion and like every day, all I'm thinking about, this kind of like total devotional love that I had. So I don't think that my relationship to the movie changes, but my relationship to the audience changes, because the audience is always vast, and then of course they have stories to tell me. Like I know so many stories from my audience about like what kind of childhood sweetheart they had and what kind of connection they had, and where the way that they the way that they connected to the movie, which is like all completely varied because people are different, right?
Very true.
So, and I think that's the thing. I think
That's cool.
the warmth of the audience, and then the way that the audience I can feel a thirst for it, or like they feel hungry for the kind of intimacy that the film offers, or the whatever the reality or the authenticity the film offers. I think that is very felt, right? But who I am isn't necessarily changing in that way. I think all I can do is to offer who I am and who I always was to the world, right? I mean, now I know certain things, like you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, now I know what NBR is, like there are things that I know more about, right? As in like, oh, so that's what that event is. Okay, Golden Globes, that's how it works. So it's kind of like I learned what like I was always like, what's a stylist? And then of course now I know what that is. Like I know what a stylist does and how the money works. Like so it's kind of like some of that is practical. So in that way, I would say that I'm learning about every phase of it, right? The release phase, and then like festival phase, release phase, and then now the awards phase. Like I feel like I'm learning the nitty-gritty of every single part of it, and I'm like, huh, I never knew that that's how people felt about that, right? It's
It's
like
really weird. Our calendars are dictated severely by the film industry. Like every
yeah.
year, it's always like we circle certain dates and we're like, okay, well, now we're coming up towards Comic-Con, so it must be the summertime. Just
Yeah,
weird.
totally.
It's a weird way to live your life. I do
Totally.
want to ask you, as a filmmaker, now that you've been through the process, which you prefer? Do you prefer being out shooting as much as you can, or do you prefer the editing process?
Well, I think the prefer is a funny thing, 'cause I mean, so after I finished making the movie, I think I just shown the director's cut, and we were gonna just finish the movie. Finish the post of it on it. My line producer asked me, "Fuck, marry, kill," pre-production, production, and post-production, right? And I said, and I told this story to the folks in London, and then they think it's called like snog, marry, pie. I think it's so gentle like that. But in America, we say fuck, marry, kill. In Canada as well, we say fuck, marry, kill. So, and my answer was so clear, because to me, it would be like I would say fuck production, because production is so dynamic and there's so much energy, and you don't know what you're going to get. And this completely spontaneous a part of it. And you plan and you plan and you plan, but sometimes you have to throw it all out. Like there is a kind of a really creative, problem solving, like really like wide-eyed part of it, where it is like so exciting, the blood is boiling, and there are like 100 people showing up to just like get this done. So that energy is, I think, the kind of energy that is I find to be the thing that one would want to fuck, like, so that was what I would say. And then of course marrying, I feel like I would marry post-production, right? Post-production is like day in and day out. It's like it's a 9 to 5, right? It's like 10 hours or 12. And then every day it just improves. You just build on the thing that you already did, right? And of course, you might have setbacks or whatever, but still it is a steady incline towards a better and better cut. And my relationship to my editor is that way too. It's very like, it's very much a partnership where you're like, where all the things that make that we have to work on to be good partners is the same way that you have to be in your editing room, which is that like some of it is about just patience and some of it is about understanding the film, right? And then seeing the film really clearly, right? It's not, you're not throwing everything against the wall. You're very much like, well, what is the movie trying to tell me? Like, it's about being a good listener, right?
Yeah.
So that is what you need in a good marriage. So it's like, in that way, I think that I would say I would marry post-production. And pre-production, I would kill. Because, guys,
just pre-production,
kill it. Just kill it. Because, I mean, pre-production is brutally important. And it is brutal. But it's very, very important. Because you're without pre-production, you cannot do the rest of it, right? Well, so pre-production, I'm just like, I know it's absolutely essential. But it is really difficult because you don't even have like 1 inch of the film made, the film shot, but right? But you're making massive binary decisions that impact like people's lives, like everybody who works in the movies, their lives, and also just like a lot of money, right? Like you're just making decisions that's going to change how $1 million is spent just based on conjecture. But it's just based on what you believe about the movie, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes you're like, well, you know, you'll be beautiful. What do I know if it's going to be beautiful, right? So some of it is like, I'm kind of like a startup CEO is sometimes how I would describe myself in the prep situation. You're being like, it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be worth spending whatever, $200,000 there, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a huge amount of cash that has to be put into making that happen. So every day you're having to make an assessment on, well, is this worth it, right? Mm. Is this worth the resource? Is this, and you're always fighting against time because any day now you're going to go and actually shoot it, right?
Yeah.
And every minute counts for prep. So much of the pressure is about, you know, like that's the part where I'm like, well, I'm making decisions based on a cloud, which is like my script, right? Which is my script that says it needs things. And you're just kind of making decision based on a thing like a smoke and mirrors, right?
But you believe in it. You have such belief in it though. You
I
do.
Have to believe in it, right?
Sure.
And I think that because it's my first film, sometimes I had more doubts than I already will for my next movie. Because in every day, you're right. The number one thing you're defeating is the doubt. Is the feeling of like, I think that I need that, but you know, how badly do I need that? Because now what they're telling me is this is going to ruin everybody's day and it's going to be $1 million. So how much of this is something that I believe in? And of course, like, I think that there are just moments where, and I think in that way, I found myself meeting and pushing through my limit every day, you know? As a filmmaker, because it was so much about like, wow, this feels like an impossible decision to make, but which decision I make is going to speak to what kind of filmmaker I am, right? And it is always binary. Like I wish that there was a middle ground you could find for things, but so often it's like, no, we will shoot that scene on a subway, right?
Yeah.
Be damned, it's $90,000 in New York City to shoot on it just to get the location, right?
Right.
Because I believe in that shot. So we're going to go and do that. So that speaks to what kind of a filmmaker I am in such a stark way, right? Because I could also say like, well, what if you put it in the cat? You know what I mean? there's a way that like what I care about was being tested and proven every day. And I think that to me was the most enlivening experience. Like I just felt so alive doing it. You know,
and now next movie, you can point at the reviews and the box office. You can say, hello. Trust me. Thank you. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that so in Korean, there's this word, choshim. And choshim basically means like the first heart, right? And it's the feeling, and it's really applied to most creative work where they say, like, you should go back to choshim. You should go back to your first heart. So what that means is the feeling that I had of like discovery and dealing with the unknown and being faced with the unknown every day, that has to be something that I carry through every single creative endeavor that I have. So next movie, oh, you know, what I'm, what I always am going to aim for is to hold on to my tuition, so that it's like I'm never going to be like, look at the nominations. But it's always more like, well, this, I have to treat this like this is also my first movie, right? In some way, like I know more, I'm so much wiser, but it still has to have the spirit of the first movie, because that's the only way that a piece of work can have the first heart, and it can have the like the it can be alive, right? Because you don't, I never want to be sitting there working on a movie feeling like, well, done this before, you know? I always want to feel like, oh no, I haven't done this before. It's so scary, you know? It's such a great feeling.
Celine, we I was lucky enough to speak with you back in like late May before the June release. And we talked a lot about your the use of your camera and the narrative reason why you'll stay on a character and the longing aspect. Like, and I found that so interesting. We talk about shooting on 35 millimeter and the 1:85 ratio. So I want to go past that scene towards the end of the film. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the narrative decision process in shooting that moment, cutting John out of the frame like that. We're feeling his presence in that, and that awkwardness. It's just a brilliant way that you play with it. But just in terms of how you play with those narrative decisions.
Totally. I'm Kevin. I totally, I remember you. I remember you from that conversation, because we had such a great conversation, Kevin.
Yeah,
I feel like we talked about, but that was a day where I was doing like 36 interviews. And I feel like I remember being like, I really love that conversation, because we had to talk about filmmaking, even in the whatever 10 minutes that we were
talking.
Right? Yeah. 4 minutes we're talking. Well, and I think that, so, I mean, to me, I mean, it is really about the way that language can create little islands or little isolated pods between two people, and there can be a culture that gets built within between two people that outside people outside of it cannot feel connected to, right? And language is one of the easiest way to do it. You know, if me and Kevin started talking in a different language that only, you know, you and I share, but then, you know, in which case then like other people on the Zoom will not have, will know what we're talking about. So in that way, even though we are sitting right next to each other, there is a way in which that their language, but of course their memory and how they see each other and the kind of a world that they live in is going to create a bit of a isolated place for the two of them to live, where it's just the two of them. And I think that that's sort of the, you're trying to weave in and out of that, because of course it does not change the fact that there is another human being who's sitting right next to them, right? So it has, so it's a, it has to move, like it needs to be, feel like it has to be a bit of an ebb and flow, right? Of like, when do you see Arthur in that scene and when don't you? And I think it has, that is the part of the, it's kind of, it's part of the dance of it, which is a bit of a revelation and hiding, right? And what happens to, for example, after we are, we stay with just Hessing and Nora in that frame, we cut to Arthur, right?
Right.
And Arthur is sitting there alone, right? So we are feeling him, but he's not been let into this conversation yet, and this culture and this world yet, right? And then eventually when she, at the end of the conversation where they finish talking about everything, and then she turns to Arthur and the camera follows her, right? And she goes like, just talking about you, right? And then finally he's able to enter into this space that they created in this bar for just Hessing and Nora, right?
Yeah.
And she's, and both of them are saying like, and your husband is the one who, who's with you in this life, which is a word of kindness. Like, I'm sure Arthur is wondering what they're talking about. But in fact, what they're talking about is that, like, wow, what an amazing thing that Arthur is a part of your life, Nora, right? So then they turn and then they let him in to their world in that way. And then, of course, eventually, Nora, you know, Nora is gone, and it's Hessing and Arthur that are, you know, sitting there, just the two of them. And again, now this world has become just these two people, Arthur and Hessing, and they're connected by, of course, the time and space, but which is a completely a miracle, because why would these two people be in the same space and time together, right?
Right.
Well, because of the miracle of Nora, because of the way that these two people care so much about this one woman together. So even though they're completely different, they don't even speak each other's language, they don't have any memory of each other, they're also able to create a world, right, in that bar, where it's just the two of them, right? And they know what they're talking about, and they're connected by this word, Inyan. They, I mean, that's what Hesing says to Arthur. Hesing says, do you know the word Inyan? Right. Mm. I think it's you and me, right? And and Arthur goes, yeah, I know what that word is because I'm married to Nora, you know? So, and in that way, they're connected and they're able to build a world of their own around this word Inyan, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Selena, yeah. I want to get.
It's so cool how you write that down. That, I mean, I'm telling you, like, all of what you just said translates as we watch it subconsciously. It's insane how that works. Well,
I would like to get you to break down, if I could, the one scene to me that will haunt me forever. And it's the briefest shot of towards the end of the film when you flash back to adolescent Nora and Hesan. And I will tell you that we were watching your film on a screener, my wife and I at home, and I had to pause it because the two of us were sobbing too much, and we didn't want to miss a single frame. Yeah. But we were devastated by that quick shot. And I have to know, was that always intentional? Well, you know, did you always mean to shoot to that? And if you could talk about capturing the young kids, you know, on that day, knowing what you or if you knew, you know, that you were going to use it later.
Yeah, well, I mean, we needed the, it was in the script, but I think that I wasn't sure if you were going to need it, right? But I still, we all, of course, were planning to shoot it. But I think the key to that particular shot is that even though in life, the two kids say goodbye to each other during the day, the two kids are shot in that one flashback moment. They're shot in the dark, and what that's supposed to supposed to imply is that these two kids have been waiting to get their goodbye in that corner for 24 years.
Oh my god! I didn't even put that together. Oh my god!
Course, in only when they're able to say goodbye in East Village as grown-ups are those kids able to then actually say goodbye? Because the truth is that the movie is built in three goodbyes, and when they're children, because they're kids, and I think we know this because we were kids once, we don't really understand the weight of a goodbye, right? So that wasn't a very good goodbye. The kid just goes bye, and that's it.
And
then only 24 years later, when they realize that from that moment, they've become different people who belong to different worlds, and they're happily in their own worlds, and this in this life, they're not going to end up together, right? When they realize this, and then they finally get to say goodbye to each other. Only then are they able to get the goodbye that they're owed. So that's why that shot is shot in the dark. And this was an idea that came out of the conversation with my DP and my production designer, Shabia Krishner and Grace Yun. And we were talking about the scene, and I kept being like, well, I want to flash back to that moment, but I want something about it to be different. Right. Mm-hmm. I wanted something about that moment to feel different than the time that it was in childhood. Mm-hmm. And we were coming up with a bunch of ideas. We had wind, we had color, we had so many different thoughts. And then I think that I forget if it was Grace or Xavier, but one of them, they were saying, it's like, well, what if it was lit like the moment when they're saying goodbye, as adults? And then I was like, bingo, that's it. Because that tells a story, right?
Yes.
That tells a story of what it is, which is that, like, well, these kids have, you know, like, they were just waiting in that corner, right? Mm. And what that's able to imply is the weight of what these 24 years have been. And they're still the same to each other 24 years later in that way, you know? It's just happens to be East Village at night.
God, you are a genius. Yeah, you're such a genius.
That's amazing.
Such a genius.
They're wrapping us. We had so many questions. We'll have to get you back on the show. I want to give a shout out to the younger actors, by the way, who played the two characters, because if those scenes don't work, the rest of the film, like, you have to have that work. And it's such an important thing. It really is that those kids had to be on point. They did.
And I think that to me, that I didn't do chemistry reads for the grown-ups because I knew that that would work. But the kids are, I did a chemistry read with the kids because, of course, their chemistry has to be exactly what you're saying. Their chemistry has to work, and it has to be the building block for the chemistry as them as adults. Because Greta and Teo, when they were working on their chemistry, they were watching this particular chemistry read video so that they could learn from it and sort of like retain the childlike chemistry that the kids, of course, naturally have. And what happened was that, so I already had the girl first. And then I was looking for the boy, and we brought in three amazing boys to come in and, do the chemistry read. And I asked the two of them, I asked them to do something that is really hard to even ask adults to do, which is to do a little bit of ad lib. And what I asked them to ad lib is like, I will ask the little Haesung to basically tell the little Nora like to stay in Korea and not leave and keep being friends with him, right? And that was the piece of ad lib. And the boy who I ended up casting, he did such a beautiful piece of ad lib that he actually made the little girl cry. And that really taught me that like this is actually the right person, right kid for the job. And that their amazing, amazing chemistry read is of course the way that the chemistry got built for the adults too. They will talk about it. Like they'll talk about how like they watch those videos and like learn so much about who they are.
That's amazing.
Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you so much.
It's an honor having you on our show. Good luck with everything the rest of the season. But just in general, thank you for making this movie. We all love it and we appreciate it. We'll have you on again next time, Celine. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, Celine. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much, you guys. This was such a good conversation.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We want to thank Celine Song for joining us. She is so awesome. And Kev, I want to give you specific props for continuously reminding us, hey, we should get Celine on the show because it's tough with the awards racing past and the holidays as well, too. We've had a couple different people have reached out to me through direct message and said, like, how come you guys haven't talked about this movie or why didn't that movie get and it's like we got hammered at the end of the year, you know, in terms of the number of titles that were coming. And then the holiday kind of shuts the industry down. And so I'm really, really glad that we made the time to circle back around and get Celine on because she was a great conversation.
And speaking of that, I know we're going to move on. There's a lot of films that, again, we all had to catch up on. Past Lives, if people out there haven't seen it, highly recommend it. Also, congrats to Celine and the whole Past Lives team because they got a PGA nomination, which is really big. And there's this year, the PGA had 10 nominations, which we're assuming are going to be the same 10. They're going to end up for Best Picture. And over the weekend, I had a chance to go to Los Angeles and I got to visit Quentin Tarantino's new theater, the Vista Theater. And they're playing a 35 millimeter exclusive engagement of The Zone of Interest.
Oh, cool.
And I just have to say, for anybody listening to our show that has heard about this film or hasn't sought it out yet, I know it's coming out in limited release, and then I think it'll platform, I'm assuming, seek this film out. I honestly can't even put into words how this film made me feel. It's so shocking and so disturbing. I'll never see it again, but I'm very moved that I did see it. I was talking to my mom about it the other day, and it's just, yeah, for people out there who haven't seen this or heard of this film, look it up. It's one of the most insane.
It should win the Oscar for best sound.
I've never heard sound design. And for people who aren't aware, like, Quentin revamped the classic Vista Theater in Los Angeles. Obviously he has the New Bev where we did our event with Quentin Tarantino for the book launch. But the Vista Theater is still like the classic. It looks like it did when it years ago, but the inside is like completely remodeled, but it still looks the classic way. But speaking of sound design that Jake's bringing up, they had this whole brand new sound system in the theater. And it's a one screen theater, and it's some of the best sound design I've ever seen. So seek that out. And also, if you're a fan of Godzilla Minus One, they're releasing it in black and white. I think I want to say this weekend or next weekend. So seek that out as well. So just two reminders.
And this weekend, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is coming back to IMAX.
And then, I hear that it's the best Spider-Man ever made.
I hate you. That's so annoying. Jake Hamilton of Fox TV. the very specific and renowned Fox TV with no clarification at all whatsoever. All right, listen, we do a draft. This is a fun competition. Everyone likes to play fantasy football. Kev, of course, is Johnny NFL nowadays.
Dude,
I'm going to get Kevin in our fantasy league.
Don't even get me started on what happened to the Eagles and the Dolphins, but continue.
Yes, but we are a movie podcast. And so we will we're going to get into the results of last year's fantasy draft, and then we're going to get right into this one. 2024, we're going to figure out who's grabbing what and how many points they're going to go for. And I will, of course, for the logistics side of this, turn it over to our wonderful producer, Gabe Kovac. Hi, Gabe. How are you?
Very excited. This is very fun. This is a fun episode for me because I love when we get to compete on the show. And this is one that sort of sits for like a year and then we come back to it. And I know that you guys probably don't even remember what you drafted, and that's kind of half the fun. Is I'm going to be revealing what you drafted, the scores you got, and then I'll reveal our winner. I'll give a quick touch base with the audience at home if anyone doesn't know what this is. Each year, we go around and everyone drafts 9 films from the upcoming release calendar that they think are going to have the highest review score according to the Rotten Tomatoes critic score, not the audience score. Disclaimer, it's not because we think that the Rotten Tomatoes critic score is some sort of beacon of truth. It's just that it's a little bit more predictable and reliable than the audience score, which can be kind of manipulated. So this is kind of just a fun way for us to score our little fantasy draft.
And I would like to add what happened with us this past year and will likely happen again this year is certain things that we choose end up getting bumped.
Well, I'll say this. This will be revealed. Oh, it only happened to one of us this year. Last year, the year before, okay. it was quite a lot. And, you know, we were in the middle of things getting delayed and postponed for several reasons. But what I'll do is I'll go through each list one by one. I'll reveal your scores as I'm going. And then at the end, I'll give you the winners. But I'm going to start with Kevin McCarthy's list.
Okay.
Starting in the 9th round, Kevin drafted Fast 10, okay. which... maybe the final Fast movie. I don't know how that story's going, but
no,
it's score.
Two more.
It's score. Rotten Tomatoes critic score of 56. I give Kevin credit for, you know, it was the last round, and he said, you know, I'm gonna vote with my heart, and I respect that. In the 8th round, Kevin took Michael Mann's Ferrari.
Ooh, I'm surprised that lasted till the 8th.
Yeah,
it did. It was a very late release, so it might have been one that sort of slipped the mind. That came in with a 72.
Okay.
Oh, and if I didn't mention, this is as of today. Sometimes these shift a little bit, but the day we're recording, I refreshed all these scores.
Oh, good
January
for you, man.
17.
I'm impressed. Nice job.
Thank you.
Good work.
In the 7th round, Kevin McCarthy took John Wick 4.
Oh, good pick.
Which
good
brought
pick.
Him in.
Good.
A 94.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's 90s.
That's a good one. That's a good
Before pick. You continue, sure, so do you add up all these numbers and then divide them up?
Yeah,
by
we just do an average. We do an average, is how I score it. Yeah.
Okay.
At number six, or in the sixth round, excuse me, Kevin took Wonka. Okay, Kevin with a lot of late releases.
I feel like that's not a bad pick. I feel like he did okay.
This is a respectable pick. It came in with an 82.
Yeah, that's honestly higher. I thought it would have been like mid 70s.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So in the fifth round, Kevin took Mission Impossible 7.
All right. I mean, that's a fair.
That's
pick.
In the '90s. That's a
no,
nine.
I don't think it is.
No, I think it is. It's that's in the '90s.
It scored a 96.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I want to say it had like the best.
Of course,
mission,
you all got to go to Rome.
Yeah. What has nothing to do with Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. Sure.
Wow. Sure.
Sean's feeding the fire.
I didn't get to go.
In the fourth round, Kevin came back down to earth a little bit with The Little Mermaid scoring 67.
I'm surprised. The flip side of like Ferrari lasting as long as it did. I'm surprised you took that one so high.
Yeah.
No joke. This is almost the exact same thing. Not to go on a football tangent. This is what happens with fantasy football too, where you kind of look back over your draft and go, "Oh my god, I can't believe I took that guy so high. Yeah. I can't believe this guy lasted all the way to the ninth round." It's almost the exact same thing.
Yeah, weirdly enough, my third round draft pick last year was Brock Bowers. I don't know how I chose that for my movie one, but yeah, we'll see what happens.
Kevin's actual third round pick,
JJ McCarthy draft,
is Indy 5, which came in with a 70. Mm. Not the worst, not the best, a bit average. In the second round, this is exactly what you guys are talking about. He took Cocaine Bear.
Really? In the second round?
I was probably just messing around or something. I don't remember that.
I don't know. In January of 2023, maybe it was like, you know, maybe that'll just take.
That was like right before
storm.
It came out, too.
I think so. I think it was a February release. That came in with a 66.
Yeah, I lost this. Of course I did. Kevin, yeah, continue.
However, his first pick, Oppenheimer.
All right.
Which came on brand, which came in with a 93.
There you go.
93. Damn. And Mission Impossible 7 with a 96. Something's wrong here.
Yeah, that's
something's wrong
really
with the system here.
Oppenheimer is a 93.
96. I mean,
can you imagine
if I'm
giving
just
Oppenheimer a bad review? I can't imagine.
Someone
I mean,
always does.
I will say this though.
You're bound to get a couple reviews. Yeah. If a movie's 3 hours long, there's one or two that are just like, it was long.
Right.
I'm talking points.
And people can have their opinions. I'm just messing around, you know.
For me, not that I, you know, we don't like to shit on movies on this podcast, but for me, 96 for Mission Impossible 7 is so surprising just because I felt it was a very, it's Mission Impossible and does great things, but it felt very middling for a Mission Impossible movie to me.
I do think, and I've said this before, and it's important to note, like when you're on Rotten Tomatoes, for example, if every critic gives a movie a 3 out of 5, that movie could end up at 100%. Mm.
The average score is more important.
Right. So it's almost like the 96% for Mission, that could be reviews that are like 3 out of 5 or 3.5 out of 5, which is kind of where we all landed. But
yeah, because I would give it, if I had to choose between fresh and rotten, I would give it fresh.
Right.
Now, it'd probably be like a 3.5 out of 5.
Right.
But it'd be a fresh.
Right. And the same thing goes for the negative. Like if everybody gave a movie a 2 out of 5.
Right.
It would get a 0% essentially. Right. That's very important to note.
By the way, if everyone's watching us on YouTube, I don't know about you guys, but I'm furiously scribbling down.
And this is often right before he knocks water all over his notes.
Yeah, no joke.
Do you guys remember your picks?
No,
not at all.
All right. I went first. So that means I'm probably last, but continue.
I don't know if you, I don't remember who went first.
This I'm talking about like you put me up first. So I'm assuming I'm third.
No, this is just how the order that it's in my doc. Okay. Up next, we have Sean's picks. And I might pick up the pace here a little bit just because we do have another draft to get to. But in the ninth round, Sean took Polite Society, which scored a 90.
That. Damn.
90?
Got a 90. And Sean, you were excited about that whenever you drafted.
Yeah, I remember you loving that.
And then you really enjoyed it. Yeah, that was one that you
terrific.
Stuck with you through the year.
Terrific.
That said, in the eighth round,
oh no,
Sean took the Jamie Foxx, Will Ferrell Talking dog vehicle strays.
Strays?
Which brought home a 53.
I'm going to go back and listen to this episode to find out what our mindsets were during all of these.
That scored a 53. Wow. In the seventh round.
Strays.
In the seventh round. Sorry, I lost my space here. Sean took Bo is Afraid. Which in January of 2023 was a very good pick for the seventh round, I would argue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it came in with a 67.
Wow. Yeah. All right.
I did not like that movie.
Polarizing film.
Polarizing.
What was the Rotten Tomatoes on Cocaine Bear one more time?
66.
And what was Bo is Afraid?
67.
Wow.
Different films? Same image, maybe.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah.
In the sixth round, Sean stuck with the Marvel ship.
Oh.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Okay. Ooh. Okay.
70s.
Brought in a respectable 82.
Okay. Oh, wow.
That's okay. way too high for that movie.
Okay.
In the fifth round, Sean took The Color Purple.
82% is actually how much CGI was in the film.
Sure. Yeah. In the fifth round, Sean took The Color Purple, which scored an 86.
Good pick.
In the fourth round, Sean took Creed 3.
Good pick.
All right.
Which scored an 88.
Yeah.
Great movie.
In the third round, Sean took The Killer from David Fincher.
Ooh.
Which scored an 86.
Whoa, Sean coming in hot.
In the second round, Sean took Barbie.
Fuck yeah! Yes!
Sean.
Which scored an 88.
What? Is that in the 90s?
That might be one that suffers from 4 billion people reviewed it.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
Oh, that's crazy.
Wow. Now, Sean's first round pick is interesting because Sean had the option of keeping Spider-Verse in the first round because it had gotten delayed in the previous draft.
Mm-hmm.
He decided to forego keeping Spider-Verse in order to draft Dune Part 2. Which subsequently was delayed out of the year.
Right.
In its place, he took The Iron Claw in the first round, technically. Technically free agent.
Okay, but
that's not a bad pick.
No, it's a good pick. It's a good
explain
pick.
How and why. By the time Gabe I only had X amount of movies that we didn't know the score.
I'll say this disclaimer now. You're responsible for your own team here. If I notice, I reach out.
Look, you gotta play the waiver wire, baby.
If you see your name drop, you reach out to me and say, hey, I'll take this.
All right. But don't worry,
Sean.
The Iron Claw is a great pick.
The Iron Claw took home a score of 88.
Yeah, I would say, I would have thought it would have been in the 90s.
Pretty good.
Chips.
That's a huge, that's a great pick.
Great. All right, thank you.
Finally, we get to Jake's list.
All right, let's go.
I won this.
It's going to be hard to beat Sean. That's a lot of 80s.
In the ninth round, Jake took Leave the World Behind.
Oh, that's good.
Which scored a 76.
Oh, wow. I thought it did better than that.
Polarizing film, I think.
Yeah.
In the eighth round, Jake took Napoleon. Which scored a 58.
Oh, I would have thought that would have been higher.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
That one hurts.
In the seventh round, Jake took Super Mario Brothers, which scored a 59.
What?
Now, this is one I noted. This was our, unless I missed one, but this is our largest swing between critics and audience because its audience score was a 95.
I love that movie.
Come on.
59. In the sixth round, Jake starts a comeback with Maestro, which scored an 80.
The irony.
Jake's number one.
Oh. The irony. In the fifth round, Jake took Asteroid City.
All right, these make sense.
Which scored a 75.
Ugh, I think I lost.
In the fourth round, Jake took Poor Things.
Okay.
Scoring a 93.
There we go.
Continuing this surge, Jake took... In the third round, Killers of the Flower Moon, which also scored a 93.
Hot damn!
In the second round,
more than Barbie and more.
It's a better movie than Barbie.
Yeah,
that's
well.
I
yeah. Debatable. Mm. Different movie. I don't know.
It is. I love Barbie. Yeah. But I think Killers is a better film. But Barbie's great.
Yeah, well, that's for film reasons.
Killers is on Apple streaming, by the way.
Right? Yeah. Yes, it is.
Anyway, that's public a different discussion. Investment. In the second round, Jake took Elemental. Scored a 74.
That would have been higher. Yeah, that should be way higher.
I think that's one that if you probably looked back, the audience score on that probably moved up the way that we
that
think
movie's
it should.
Really good.
In the first round, Jake took Spider-Verse from Sean, which scored a 95.
Nice.
Wait, how did he get it from me?
You decided not to keep it.
You offered a trade?
No, you
gave it up.
You had the option, which you'll see in the next draft. You had the option to keep, Spider-Verse because it moved.
It moved. Okay. All right.
But you said, no, I won't keep it. And you took Dune instead.
I gotcha.
I didn't do great, but I'm also not mad at my, like, all of my picks make sense to me.
Yeah.
It's close. I'm going to start with announcing the winner just because there's only three of you and there's really no way to lead up to that.
to make it dramatic.
No real suspense.
So the winner of the Real Blend 2023 Fantasy Movie Draft with an average of 80.8.
That's Sean.
Sean O'Connell.
There we go. The key. Well done.
If you want to see how close this year was, in second place was Jake with 78.1.
Damn.
Well done.
And less than a point behind him is Kevin with 77.3.
Big Daddy Kev. Yeah,
Big Daddy Kev.
It's pretty close. Pretty close.
So then Kevin should go first for this round.
No, so I did a random order.
Oh.
Just because there's no like keepers technically, you know, there's no.
I would assume the winner goes first.
No, usually in like in fantasy sports, if you win, you have like the least odds of picking higher. But again, there's only three of you. So, you know,
seems backwards.
Well, no.
In terms of sports.
In sports, it's that way. Oh, fantasy.
It seems backwards. Yeah.
No. Anyway, congratulations, Sean. I don't remember if you bet anything. Maybe a cheeseburger from Whataburger you wrote. No. Congratulations.
It would keep you hydrated.
That's true. Yeah. I already have this giant glass of water right here. I'll just maintain this.
All right. On that note, we are going to throw it to a break, and when we come back, we are going to start the draft of the 2024 season. Okay, and we are back, and we're going to kick things off with revealing the order of this year's draft. But before I do, someone here has to make a decision.
Sean?
Yes.
You lost the opportunity for Dune Part 2 last year.
Correct.
And you picked it in the first round. So same as we did last year, I will give you the opportunity now, before you hear the order, do you want to keep Dune Part 2 as your first round pick, or do you want to put it back on the board and we get started?
I am going to put it back on the board.
It's back on the board!
Okay. All right. Now,
I'm putting Dune Part 2 back on the board.
Wow!
That's fun. That's
why?
Fun.
Because
he's going for Madam Web, baby.
Because I got twisters.
That's true.
That thing's got a dollar sign on the end of it for nothing.
Twister. But I don't know. Oh, but I don't know if I get to pick first, though, do I?
That's what I said. That's before I reveal the order.
Before you reveal the order.
So it might not matter.
I might go third.
Yeah. Do you think it'll drop?
Well, then in that case, I'd like to keep it then.
No, you already gave it up.
No, you already gave it up, dude. We started to sway you the other way, but your initial is give it up.
Gabe, what say you?
That's okay.
Here's what I say. Ultimately, it doesn't matter because Sean is our first
Sean's
pick.
Sean's first.
Well, there you go.
Okay. Well, it's back.
So
the order this year, random generator,
is Sean, Jake, and then Kevin.
Okay.
All right.
So, Sean, you are on the clock first.
And we can just pull up like a movie release calendar.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, cool. Whatever. And then it's up to you if you feel like it's a maybe it'll get released, that kind of thing. You know, you're welcome to draft it. But if it drops, you know, you got to replace it later.
Let me tell you what is going to be the highest critically rated film of 2024. And it's George Miller's Furiosa. Give it to me, number one.
Controversial pick. A film you're not excited to see, right?
Not in the least.
Exactly.
But critics cannot get enough of slobbering all over the Mad Max franchise.
Can we just remind our audience that Sean O'Connell doesn't think Mad Max Fury Road is a good movie? I just want to put that out there. Thank you. That's it.
It is one of the most overhyped films.
Jake, you are now on the clock. Your first overall pick.
Give me that Dune 2, baby. Give me that
Dune 2. It drops to second.
Yeah.
Will the say this is a repeat of last year.
Will it open?
Spider-Verse drops. I'm going to lose my shit if like 30 minutes after this episode, it's like Furiosa moved to 2025.
That's very possible. That's very possible.
All right, Kevin, your first round pick. You're on the clock.
I'm going to go with Deadpool 3.
We're snake drafting,
we're snake,
right?
So Kevin,
you're up right away for the second round.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Snake draft.
Amazing. Then I will take Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Mm, that's a good nice. Pick. I wanted that. Good pick.
Well, you're next.
I'm going to take Inside Out 2.
Oh, it's a good one.
Ooh.
I had that as my eighth round.
I feel like Pixar is always a fairly safe bet. I feel like you're never going to crash and burn with Pixar.
You said
like,
Inside Out 2, right?
Inside Out 2. I feel like with Pixar, like the worst you're going to do is like in the 70s.
Yeah, I think what would we say? Elemental came like 74.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah. Let me double check my work on that.
I feel like people went into Elemental with like with the pitchforks and their knives sharpened, ready to take it down.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That one was a 93 on audience score.
That's crazy.
Element.
That's crazy.
That's gonna do well.
All right. Rounding out the second round, Sean, what is your second pick?
Challengers.
Oh, I had that written down. That's good.
Yeah.
That's nice. A good pick.
Sean, you're starting the third round. It's right back to you.
Give me Nosferatu.
Good pick. That's Sean's third.
That is Sean's third. And that brings us to Jake's third.
I'm going to go the animated film Lord of the Rings, War of Rohirrim.
Okay. Good call.
Can you spell Rohirrim for me?
I believe it's Rohirrim. Forgive me.
It's probably the only one that sounds like that coming out this year. I'll be able to find it.
As far as I know, it's the only Lord of the Rings coming out this year.
Are they doing the second season? Is that coming out this year?
I don't think so. I'm not sure they started filming that.
I thought they were able to film during the strike.
Oh, maybe because they filmed overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, that brings us to your third round pick.
I'm going to go with the Janusz Kaminski lensed film If.
Good call.
Which is directed by John Krasinski, starring Ryan Reynolds.
That does look that's. Just all of the details you just said makes me very interested.
Yeah, Spielberg's guy shot this. It's awesome. So it looks cool. So,
Kevin, you're back on the board right away with the fourth round.
I will then take Joker 2.
Joker 2.
Even though I know Joker 1 didn't have a good Rotten Tomatoes rating, I have a feeling
did
this
it not?
One. I don't think it did. Someone double check that. I think it was lower than. I remember looking at that Rotten Tomatoes rating for Joker 1 and being like, I think it was like 60 something.
69.
I'm gonna have to find some more movies. We're blowing through everything on my list.
Yeah. It had a 69 critic rating.
Isn't that wild?
88 audience. Yeah, I remember coming down on it over time. Not like down on it, but I remember leaving it being like thinking really, really highly of it. And then after a rewatch, I was like,
Yeah.
I didn't love it as much as I did originally.
It's very good. Yeah. All right, that was my fourth round pick, right?
Yep, and Jake?
I'm going to go Mickey 17.
Damn it, you fucker.
I heard that got moved.
Well, it got moved from March. It was supposed to come out in March. But I have faith that it's hopefully not going to be delayed an entire year. I'd hope that we'll see what happens.
Cool. Okay.
I'm taking a little bit of a risk there.
That's Robert Pattinson.
Mm-hmm.
Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah. Bong Joon-ho, his follow-up to Parasite.
Sean, your fourth round pick.
All right, I would like to ask a question.
That's not what this game is. Move on. No, I'm just kidding.
We might have an answer.
Is Untitled Jordan Peele a 2024 movie?
2025.
No. Yeah.
I think they moved it. I think it won't come out this year. There's no way.
Okay.
He hasn't even started production.
I'll say this. If there's something that's on the calendar that is untitled, I'll allow you to draft it if that was more your question.
Yeah.
But that one I know for sure.
But again, Risk if it doesn't even have a released title.
Maybe. Yeah.
All right. Give me Wicked Part 1, I guess.
Wicked Part 1? Yeah. What's that?
It's an adaptation of the Broadway musical.
Wait, no. I know what Wicked is. It's two parts?
It's
two parts.
Oh, I didn't know that. The second part is
The Wizard of Oz.
I think they're a year apart.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
What pick is that for Sean?
Part 2, they just put Wizard of Oz in theaters. That's really good.
Sean is up with his fifth round pick.
I'm up again?
Yep.
Didn't the guy who directed Wizard of Oz, was it Victor Fleming? He did Gone with the Wind and that movie in the same year.
Yeah, I think didn't he come in partway through one of them?
Yeah, I think partway through Gone with the Wind, but gosh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that was back when there were like seven directors.
Yeah. I think Gone with the Wind had like five directors or something like that. Yeah.
All right. Give me... Shit, I don't believe that this is going to be the case.
Down to the wire in the fifth round, and it's already getting nitty and gritty.
It's getting thin, baby.
There's so many good ones left.
Give me Gladiator 2.
Oh, that was my next one.
That's Sean's fifth.
And they just wrapped that, by the way.
That's awesome. I'm so excited for that.
Little shameless plug when we had Ridley Scott on for Napoleon. He was in the middle of going back to filming Gladiator 2. So,
and he talked about his original idea that involved a portal to hell, which you should go listen to that interview too.
I'm afraid critics are going to have their knives out for that. You know,
I don't know. I feel like Gladiator's beloved.
People love Paul Mescal. Like people.
Oh, there's that too. Denzel.
It's going to be.
And I feel like, isn't Ridley kind of a, he puts out one and people are like, eh. And then he puts out another one. And people are like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And then every time they go, it's Ridley, it's gotta be good. And then they kind of react. It kind of feels like he goes back and forth with critics. I mean, not that his movies necessarily go back and forth.
It is a pretty big undertaking.
The Last Duel was severely underappreciated.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
Jake, you're up with your fifth round pick.
I'm going to choose Drive Away Dolls. The Ethan Coen.
Yes.
Feature.
Is this his directorial debut post Coen Brothers?
Mm-hmm. This is solo. Yeah.
Kevin, that puts you in for the fifth round.
Is this Adam where I have Webb. A double pick?
Oh, yes. You have your fifth and your sixth. Adam
Webb. See, what's funny is we're all joking. Watch Madam Webb be amazing.
Well, as you say, Madam Webb, really all we know is a trailer.
Yeah. And I also I like the three leads. So I'm in. All right.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, come on, Kev.
You know what? Screw it. No, I'm just kidding. No, oh, God.
A year from now, and he's like, "I did what?"
I'm gonna go with the Fall Guy.
Yeah, I just wrote that down.
I'm gonna give a little insight into why I'm picking this because I actually almost opened with this one because the reason. Well, I love David Leitch. The concept is really cool. It's basically Drive with a bigger budget, right? He's like a stunt driver and Ryan Gosling. But the reason why I'm confident in this one, did you guys see that they're going to premiere 2 months early at South by Southwest?
Oh, they are? Yes, I did see that.
You don't do that unless your movie's good.
That's a good call.
tell
that to Disney and Indiana Jones.
My argument for Disney and Indiana Jones was that that was kind of a career retrospective to, you know, Ford and like, you know, they gave him the award there. It felt more like overarching indie rather than just, hey, let's premiere 5 here. That did backfire. And we all know that now. My mom or dad sent me an article the other day. I think that Indy 5 was like the least profitable film or the most that of the year in terms of budget and box office. Really? It lost the most money from what I someone looked that up. I'll double check it. But all right. So I'm going to go with the Fall Guy.
Okay. And then your sixth round pick.
And that's because of the South by Southwest thing. And then for sixth pick, I'm going to go Kung Fu Panda 4.
Okay.
You know what?
That might be, I mean, I bet you the last three have great ratings.
That's not a bad pick.
That is really
coming out, right? That's the sort of thing of like everyone who's reviewing March, that film probably likes those movies.
You yeah. know what I mean? And I could see that being like a it'll just be like a fun family film.
Yeah. Jake, your sixth round pick.
I am going to go The Bike Riders.
Yeah, baby. You can't delay a movie twice. It's never been done. Sean, you are up with your sixth round pick.
So can I take Linklater's Hitman? Because it hasn't really opened yet, right?
But the reviews are already out for it.
Let me look and see. Here's how I'll decide.
Bike Riders reviews.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't think those can count then. If there's
too
already
late, I already picked it.
Well, hang on, let me look. Let
can't
me
take
look.
It back.
This is how I do it. If it already has,
I'll let Gabe.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I think those two might be not me eligible.
Yeah, Jake. If it was like two reviews, I'd give it to you. But it has 30. It has 35.
Yeah, but good thing the limit's 36.
Right. I think we're gonna have to take a step back. Thank
Come
you.
On.
That's a good call. Jake, I'm going to bring it back to you in the sixth round.
Son of a bitch. Give me...
Horseshit.
Give me Quiet Place Day One from the director of Pig.
And then, Sean, what was the one that you had put up?
Hitman. I'll check. I said Hitman.
I hope there are 36 reviews.
Linklaters. Why is 36 such an important number, Jake?
Because it was one more than 35.
37, Kevin Smith style.
I thought it was also a very important year that someone's turned
in. Yeah.
Special voice.
Yeah, Sean, that is ineligible. It has 70 reviews.
Damn. Wow.
Guess what its score is after
to
70
be
reviews.
Fair, I didn't look. I didn't
no,
know.
No, I believe you. I
to
believe
be fair.
Guess what its score is after 70 reviews.
90
something.
96.
Yeah, Sean knew that. He already knew.
Foiled. I knew it got good reviews.
All right, Sean, your sixth round pick.
Okay, give me Horizon Chapter 1.
Oh, who's going to take Horizon Chapter 2? Good pick.
Does it come out the same year? Or is it?
I thought it was like months apart.
I hope they make it a big event.
Oh, that was good.
Come on.
That was good.
Thank you.
I love that movie.
Paul Verhoeven, is that his movie?
Yeah. Wait, is it Verhoeven?
Let's look and see. Yeah, they both come out this year.
Both Horizons?
Oh, do I want to take Chapter 2?
Chapter 1? Yeah, you got back-to-back picks.
Come on, baby.
Jeez, I should have taken Chapter 2. It would probably get better reviews.
You take them both with this back-to-back.
Do I want to do that? Yeah, why not?
Oh, wow.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
Cut to... Worst Western of all time. So Chapter 2 gets scrapped.
Makes Waterworld look like Citizen Kane.
Yeah, yeah. Horizon 2, more like Waterworld 2.
The postman rang twice. Poor Costner and his duds. Man.
That's so good.
Oh, man. Well,
Jake, you're on your seventh pick.
I'm going to take Kinds of Kindness, the next matchup between Yorgos and Emma Stone.
Say that again, sorry.
Kinds of Kindness.
Yes. Hey, why not? Why not? They haven't missed yet, have they? Kevin, that brings us to your seventh and eighth pick.
I will go with Alex Garland's Civil War.
Mm.
Ooh, yeah. That seems...
Number seven.
High risk, high reward.
Yeah, I would say that's a risky one.
Yeah, cut to a year from now when Kevin goes, I thought I picked Captain America Civil War.
Yeah. That's Kevin's seventh.
Yes, and for the eighth round, you're on the clock. I'm not really keeping.
Go with just because of I don't think that the franchise generally gets the best reviews, but I'm gonna just hope that this one lands. So Bad Boys 4.
Mm.
Is my number eighth pick. Okay. And that's just kind of more of a, I just wanted to, I love that franchise. So
yeah. Jake, your eighth pick.
I'm going to say the same thing in that they haven't gotten the best reviews lately, but I'm going to hope this one lands. I'm going to Fede's Alien. and just pray that
what
it's...
What was it called? Romulus?
They're saying it's Romulus, but has that been confirmed?
I don't know. I'll just put... I'll put Alien Fetty.
Ridley loved it.
Yeah, but he also didn't like Blade Runner 2049, so...
Yeah.
Take that for what you will.
Sean, you are up with your eighth pick.
I'm a little
eighth
torn.
And ninth. These are your last two picks.
This is it for me?
This is it for you.
All right. Give me Twisters.
Twisters.
And give me Madam Fucking Web.
Yes.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah, I want it.
I cannot wait for a year from now.
It's going to be 99%.
This is Sean's
greatest movie of the millennia.
There's a couple of things that I have written down here that no one has picked, and I'm very surprised that I really should have taken. But yeah.
Kev, or Sean's headline for his review, Marvel is saved. It's a Sony movie.
That's Sean's 8 and 9?
Yes.
50 so Jake, Shades we're on your.
Okay.
Yeah, Jake, your final pick of the draft?
Oh, this is my 10?
9. We'll only do 9.
Oh, we're only doing 9.
Yep.
Oh,
which
no.
is weird. That's weird. Why?
I think when we started doing it, it just 10 seemed a bit of a stretch. Like by the time we got there,
I could go to 10.
Do we want to add a 10th round?
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
Okay,
yeah.
We're going to add it. Ladies and gentlemen at home, as commissioner of the league, I have to make an official announcement this year.
We're going to 10, baby. We're adding a kicker.
We're adding a 10th round. It's never been done before. The league needed some expansion.
Yeah. I'm going to choose Roadhouse.
Give me just a moment. I have to redo my... Just change a little bit here. Okay, sorry.
You're I'm going round. With Roadhouse.
You Roadhouse.
Sure? Yeah, Roadhouse.
Nice. Hmm.
That project seems ill-conceived.
But the buzz that I'm hearing is that like Jake Gyllenhaal and the director, I think it's Doug Liman.
I was going to say it has
that they were like so happy with the final product and so proud of it and so into it that they literally like have been fighting with Jeff Bezos to try to get a theatrical distribution.
Yeah, Amazon.
Wow.
Yeah.
He trained to be a UFC fighter in that. He should.
Yeah.
Yeah. He showed
Bezos,
up. At a
Bezos
real
should
UFC
watch
event.
Out, you know, if he's trying to fight him. terrible joke, but that was just buying Kevin time for his 9th and 10th pick.
Oh, I have to do two here. All right. Yeah. My number 9 is going to be the new John Watts film.
Ooh. Oh, that's a good call.
This is George Clooney and Brad Pitt.
Mm.
Wolf's.
Good pick. Yeah. That's one that I feel like in a year we're going to be like, how did that last all the way?
And that's part 1. And then Wall Street is part 2. And then let me see here. All right. Number 10. I'm debating between a couple since I wasn't planning on doing 10, but I am going to go. I'm looking through a list here of what's coming out. I'm just going to take Ballerina.
Yeah, that's one that I'm sitting there wondering why it's still there.
I think because, well, one, I like Ana de Armas. Two, it's a John Wick spinoff.
Yeah.
I you know, not that Nobody was a spinoff, but I thought I like that genre that they play that of that world, of that fighting world. So, and I think
you know who directed it?
Who?
Len Wiseman.
Oh, really?
No, he hasn't been doing anything in a really long time.
All right, well, there you go, Ballerina.
Jake, your 10th and final pick of the draft.
My 10th and final pick is a high risk, high reward.
Okay.
Because of the director who has directed some classics, but also hasn't been known for firing on all cylinders lately, I'm going to go with Megalopolis.
Oh,
okay.
I'm surprised that we didn't even think about that one.
Who is that?
Francis Ford Coppola.
Self-funded for like $150 million or something like that?
His own money.
And I should really, open
Costner's
up a vineyard.
Costner's movie is self-funded.
It is.
Yeah? Well.
Costner's movie, yeah.
Yeah, can't believe five seasons.
What'd you say, Gabe?
Can't believe I picked both parts. That was a mistake.
If he doesn't come on the show now,
who?
Costner.
I'm just picturing Sean telling Kevin Costner on our show. I drafted both parts and getting nothing and getting no reaction whatsoever. He just stares into the camera.
Yeah, Sean's 2 minutes of Sean's junket is him setting up what a fantasy draft is and then how that works in the movies.
I bet it gets the second part.
You play
back.
Fantasy football, and he goes no, and he goes Okay, so here's how fantasy football works.
What do you mean? He's starting draft day.
No, that's true.
Come on.
That's true. That's a good point.
He's got to know that's what it's about.
For the record, don't watch draft day if you want to learn how football drafts work.
Good point. Sean, you're the last pick of the draft with this new expanded 10th round.
There's one major movie that I'm really surprised none of us have taken, and I think it's because I'm also
surprised that Sean hasn't chosen a particular film.
Well, he spent two of his picks on Kevin Costner. So he might have missed one or two.
Sean, there's a big movie coming out that you're very excited about that I'm surprised you didn't use.
Are you talking about Beyond the Spider-Verse?
No.
Because I don't think it's coming out.
Yeah, it's not coming out.
Not the one I'm thinking. I will say
but that would be a major steal if you took it as the last pick of the draft.
In the last expanded spot that we weren't even supposed to have.
We forgot. Oh my God.
We forgot.
If it doesn't happen, you get to replace it. I mean,
the one I'm talking about is high risk, could possibly be high reward. It's the fourth one in the franchise.
Well, this is like drafting. No one else that can pick, so you can tell me what it is, and then I'll decide whether I'm going to take it or not.
Beverly Hills Cop.
No, I don't think that's going to do well.
You never know.
The one I was thinking about was, and again, high risk, more likely high, well, more high risk than probably high reward is Beetlejuice 2.
Well, that's where I'm leaning. That's actually where I'm leaning right now.
Beyond the Spider-Verse is kind of like an injured player.
No one took Ghostbusters Frozen Empire either, which I don't think that's going to do. You know what? I'm going to go for I'll go with Project Artemis.
Okay.
What is that?
Is that the one? Is that the sequel to Hotel Artemis?
No, it's
Johansson and.
But it's Chris Andy Evans. Weir book, right? Project Artemis, the guy that did The Martian.
Yes, correct. Yep. Yes,
I can't remember if it was Project Artemis or his other book that I'm technically in the middle of reading, but I kind of fell off of it.
Beetlejuice went undrafted.
It did. I don't think that's going to be good.
I'm a little worried about it.
I mean, Jenna Ortega said in an interview the other day that. It's the most fun she's ever had on a set, and she doesn't strike me as one that right, says nice things unless she believes it.
We are running long, so I'm going to quickly recap each of your lists for the folks at home, and then I will let Sean close us out with his question for the audience to tune in the comments. But quickly, starting with Sean, who drafted first, starting in the first round, going through 10, Sean has Furiosa, Challengers, Winner. Nosferatu.
Winner.
Wicked Part 2, Gladiator 2, Horizon, An American Saga, Chapter 1. Horizon, An American Saga, Chapter 2.
Oh boy.
Twisters.
I must have been yellow stone to make those picks.
Madam Web.
Twisters? I picked Twisters and Madam Web. Fuck, why did I take this seriously?
And Project Artemis. Jake, who picked second, starting in the first round, took Dune Part 2, Inside Out 2, Lord of the Rings War of... I didn't spell it out.
Lord of the Rings.
What did I say?
No, I'm just saying. We can just call it Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings movie property. Mickey 17, Drive Away Dolls, Quiet Place, Day One, Kinds of Kindness, the new alien flick from Fede Alvarez, Roadhouse, and Megalopolis.
I feel good.
Not bad. Kevin.
Cocaine Bear. Round,
took Deadpool, Deadpool 3.
Okay.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
That's a good pick.
If. Joker 2. The Fall Guy. Kung Fu Panda 4, which I just wrote Kung Fu 4. Different movie. Civil War. Bad Boys 4. Two fours on this list. Wolves from John Watts and Ballerina. Well done, boys. Another year in the books.
Will Jack Nicholson show up in Wolves?
I love that movie. Him and Michelle Pfeiffer. That's a great movie.
Comes out of retirement just for the joke.
Just the two Wolves.
Sean. Mean,
if anybody could do it, it would be John Watts because he got Tobey Maguire out of retirement from Spider-Man.
There's a big Tobey Maguire. Tobey Maguire.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. The joke was the idea that they pulled someone out of an older movie.
All right. Listen, it's your guys' turn now. You've heard our picks. Tell us what film you think is going to be the most highly rated among critics in 2024. Hit the comments down below. Let us know which ones you guys believe. And also, if you're down there, let us know who you think is going to win the 2024 draft early. We're going to hold you to your picks, and we'll come back around in February of 2025 and discuss this.
I think we might, maybe we'll do like a check-in this year.
That'd be a good idea.
Maybe we'll just do a quarterly check-in or something.
I like that.
Yeah.
That makes sense. All right. In the meantime, follow us on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Gabe Kovac, and the show is at Real Blend. We will talk to you guys next week do we have an interview next week? I don't know. Stick around. We'll see.
Stick around.
Dune Part 2.
Stick around.
Dune Part 2. Dunes.
Every Deadpool 3. Tunes.
Deadpool's.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.